Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, fam.
Hey, fam. You are listening to the fifth episode of Hey, Fam. Hey, Fam is a podcast where me, Levins, and him, Angus, I would like you sometimes to be like, hey, when I say your name.
Okay, let's do it again then.
Hey, Fam is a podcast where me, Levins, and him, Angus.
That's me.
Talk about things that we really like. Those things are comics and video games and movies and TV.
Is it the first podcast based off an ongoing chat thread?
I mean, who could say?
I mean, this could be the next serial. If one of us dies, our chats could be used in evidence, and that this could be like, you know,
yeah, I mean,
Angus Truscott.
I definitely think the only people that put Serial and Hey Fam in the same category are like my parents, who
yeah.
potentially only listen to two podcasts in their life.
Or also the absolute madmen at iTunes, because if you go to iTunes now and there's the 10 years of podcasting banner at the top, click on that. This is true, fam. There is a bunch of classic podcasts you should listen to, while Serial is obviously at the top. Down the bottom, there's a new and noteworthy section. Hey, fam, right there. So
we're a new classic.
We're a brand new classic.
They're predicting it.
We're like New Coke. There's nothing could go wrong.
On today's show, we are going to be talking about, like usual, Ballers. We'll be talking about some True Detective, the latest episodes of those shows.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about, we talked about it last week, the Batman announcement that Ben Affleck and Geoff Johns will be writing the next Batman movie. And we'll also go into greater detail with what we like about Geoff Johns' comics.
Maybe some things we don't.
Oh, a lot of things we don't. Plus, while we're talking about comics, we'll also talk about Archie again. And maybe some a bit more comics chat than usual. And we'll be talking about Ant-Man. Which is a Marvel movie that just hit the cinemas.
Yeah.
And we got a real cool guest to join us to talk about these cool things. Welcome to the Hey Fam. The Hey Fam Fam.
The Hey Fam Extended Fam.
I was going to like describe where we are right now as a much more extravagant place
Hey Fam
than your
Studios.
Living room.
Yeah, this is Studios
Emporium?
Yeah, the Hey Fam Emporium.
Hey Fam Emporium.
Like yeah, you've just been checked at the security gate. Thanks for leaving all recording devices besides this one with our security guard and tech heads.
Tech gurus.
Tech gurus. So I was calling them tech heads. It is kind of like,
I want my life to, like, when I have, my own massive company, I only want gurus.
You
want
to be referred to as, something guru. Or you know what else is almost as, like, cringeworthy? Ninja. Be like, oh, yeah, he's our bread ninja. Like, he cooks, like, the best. You know, like, ninjas just become this, like, you're the best at the job, I guess.
But ninjas is also that, like, terrifying middle ground where, like, fat, potentially racist guys say ninja instead of the N-word.
Also, you could be a mutated turtle.
Oh, that's true too.
But if you love pizza, we got no problems with that in the Hey Fam Emporium. In fact, we encourage it.
Back to gurus, because our guest today is absolutely a comic guru, if there ever was one.
Is this the first guru we've had on the show?
This is definitely the first. I mean, no offense to Jen Fricker.
Maybe she's a guru.
She's a Channing Tatum's dick guru.
Yeah. Damn it, I thought I was.
You both can be, man. It's a huge field.
Yeah. Channing Tatum's the type of guy who probably has two dicks as well. Like, he's just
one
so
for the
much
weekend.
To give. Yeah.
Our guest today is Siobhan Coombs.
Hello.
Someone who I have bought hundreds and hundreds of issues of different comics off over the years.
So she owes this. Is this it? Is it a blood pact?
Like, she's yeah. I got a free week once, and she was like, if you ever start a podcast, I have to be a guest.
It's like a drunken deal. Yeah. Just give me your comics. I don't have money. I'm good for it. I swear, if we ever have a podcast, you'll be the second guest on it. I swear. It's weird how that panned out.
It's an honor. Thank
yeah,
you.
But now you're actually out of the selling comics as your day job game.
I am, which is weird.
Do you miss it?
I do. I feel really pathetic, but I really do.
I miss
hanging out in a comic book store all day, every day.
Well, getting paid for it at least while you did it
as well. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's a bonus compared to like people who don't get paid there. I mean, do you still have the same conversations in your new job that you would have there and You get good responses or just a lot of...
No one wants to talk to me about comics ever. Or if they do, it's this real sort of like, oh, so I heard you're the chick who's into comics.
That's the worst.
Let me test you.
Yeah, I read Watchmen once or twice.
Yeah, some guy...
What's the deal with that ending?
I caught 30 minutes of it on cable one night. I'm a real comic guru too.
Some guy comes up to me the other day and goes, I want to test you. What do you think of Victor Von Doom?
Ooh.
And I was like... like, not a very nice guy, I guess. Like, in what sense? In what
shit
sense?
Face?
And then he's yeah.
What's under the mask, man? What do you got to hide?
How good would it be if in the new Fantastic Four movie, this is a new segment that I've actually done every week so far in Hey Fam. It's called How Good Would It Be? And then, but how good would it be at the end of the new Fantastic Four movie, Victor Von Doom takes his mask off and it's
Nick Fury?
The mask from The Mask.
Oh, yeah.
And then he goes, somebody stop me.
And it becomes like,
and then Richard stops him.
And becomes well, that could be a really good motivation.
Oh, and then Richard. And then Johnny Blaze on fire.
Smoking.
Yeah, it writes itself.
Then it becomes perfect. A Jim Avery type of dog whistles at Invisible Woman. Writes itself.
Definitely. And we'll be revisiting this fantastic idea throughout the podcast. But we've been talking for 5 minutes and we haven't hit the very, very important first segment of every Hey Fam. That is...
First segment with a sting as well now.
Oh, yeah. We have that cool sting that Jen Fricker recorded for us. Are you going to play the one that she recorded like straight or the one that she recorded as Ari?
I think the Ari one. I think it's going to really...
Maybe both over the top of each other.
Yeah, I guess that she can harmonize with Ari. I mean, I've always wanted to harmonize with Ari Gold. Now Jen Fricker can and die happy knowing she has. So we are talking about Ballers.
Let's play that sting. Is it the Ballers Minute? Is that what we're calling it?
Yeah, I think so. Take it away.
Even though you spend about 10 minutes.
Take away Tech Guru.
Lloyd! Come in here and show me what's going on at Ballers!
All right.
That was the sting.
Wow,
what a sting.
What a fantastic sting.
If you can do a better one, I'd like to see you try it. We're not going to put it in. That one's set in stone.
Ballers is the show on HBO right now. The Rock plays a sports marketing genius. The
Spencer
world
is a terrible
place. And nobody in the world watches Ballers except one guy. He is our Ballers guru, Mr. Angus Truscott. What All happened right. in Ballers this week?
Well, here's the thing with Ballers this week. I haven't watched it. So this week I'm going to do it. I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to make 3 Ballers predictions.
Oh, amazing.
So that means next week I have to watch 2 episodes.
Fuck, man. That is literally my biggest nightmare.
Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
The first episode I actually did watch twice. So I've lived your nightmare, man. I've been, I've seen your hell and it's custom suits and a lot of bronzing. But, all right. So here are my
predictions. Have you watched any Ballers yet?
I haven't, but I'm Keep a it huge that way. The Rock fan.
Yeah, totally. Do you feel like you could
really check
get
it out.
Part of that Ballers lifestyle?
Oh yeah, for sure. I try to live my life like The Rock in a lot of ways.
Wining, dining,
generally.
And signing. I mean, that's pretty much what you gotta.
And marketing. Wining, dining, and marketing.
I don't know why they should really be coming to me for slogans. I mean, I guess it takes one guy to watch a show for a second season to be greenlit these days. I mean,
our big news last week was that Ballers is being greenlit for a second season, something that we thought would never happen.
Yeah.
But turns out we're terrible at predicting things, which is why Angus is going to give us 3 predictions for this week's
All right.
Ballers.
Let's beat our track record of shit predictions. All right, first prediction, The Rock will take a pill pop and refer to something from his past which has caused him to pop a pill, but he always does it in secret. That's one prediction.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty broad.
It's pretty broad, but I guarantee. I mean, the show ranges from 27 to 35 minutes. I've noticed, so there's going to be there's time for it. Also, I also predict it'd be good if we had drum roll sound effects, but we will when we upgrade to the bigger studios. As young athlete, will make a mistake in their social life, which could affect their professional sport career.
Okay,
probably to do with sex. That's another prediction.
Give us an example of what one of those things could be.
Well, look, if it was anything, judging by the two episodes ago's monumental episode, which I can't believe it hasn't been reached Seinfeld status, like the car park episode or that, because the whole thing was set on a yacht, which I thought was very ballsy for a show. It was just brave. I thought finally they're making a show for us.
If this was a Friends episode, it would have been called
The One on the Yacht. Yeah. The one where Phoebe fell off a yacht or something.
Is The Rock Phoebe?
I think The Rock is all of the Friends. That's how versatile he is as an
actor. And they didn't hire anyone else to play any other Friends.
Yeah.
It's just he's all 6 Friends and then everyone else is Janice.
He's goofy. He's fine. Yeah, he can do it all. He's a straight guy. That's a whole other podcast. That's just The Rock podcast.
Third prediction.
Someone banged. No, you want an example
of
a sports star.
I want too much.
Well, you should be watching Ballers, man.
You get it all.
Basically, a guy was literally a motherfucker. He banged another team member's mum, but he didn't know because she was quite young and I guess, if you will, yummy mummy.
You can be a motherfucker as long as you don't fuck your own mother, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's where I thought fine. That was going and I was like, whoa, that's really controversial.
So I don't know whether... Yeah, no, no, it was a...
For a show you've never watched one second of.
It's that edgy HBO shit, man. But I mean, I don't know what the repercussions were. It could bring them stronger together, like more brotherly or... Maybe some weird stepdad scenario. I don't know. I'd love to watch this
Hey,
develop.
It's my brother from another mother, which you happen to fuck.
Yeah, I mean, that rolls off the tongue. Beautiful. And I also think Rob Corddry will say something that makes him look like an out-of-touch white guy.
They're my three predictions. Rob Corddry.
So Rock will pop pills. Oh, no, and bonus prediction, that horrible Drake verse is still on the theme song. I guarantee that would still probably be there.
But so, yeah, you pretty much just describe what happens in every
episode. Every episode, yeah. So this is the most pointless... pointless part of the segment of the show, but it will die only when Ballers stops ceasing to be.
And even though, yeah, 5 minutes of pointless predictions is still a small penance to pay instead of watching a full episode of Ballers.
So impress your jockey friends, impress your boss, your new boss who you're trying to get in the good books. Just I know he loves Ballers. He's a boss. Like, he kind of has
to. It's the rule. I mean, these in 2015, you can't be a boss unless you love
Ballers. You get your MBA, you get your Blu-ray set of Ballers. It's you graduate with it.
You pre-order for the Ballers Blu-ray set for when it comes out.
The deluxe set, because it also comes with a Nerf, like, American gridiron football, you know, or a Rock tanning kit. You pick.
It's your pick. Yeah, there are two different decisions.
We're picking, but yeah, let's see what happens.
Real fans get both.
The stakes are high.
True Detective Season 2, another actually good show. Well, I mean, it depends on who you are. Maybe
depends on who you are.
I reckon there's definitely a few people in this world that like Ballers more than True Detective Season 2.
Well, you know what? They haven't announced True Detective Season 3. Ooh. Halfway through True Detective Season, Ballers Season 1, Season 2 is already happening.
What if it's a crossover?
Now, that's the type of crime I can get involved. And I know who's the truest detective out of everyone there.
Siobhan, did you watch the latest episode of True Detective?
I did.
Are you on board with this season?
Like the first two episodes, I was like, this is sick. I'm really enjoying this. Like super pulpy, like just really fun. And then what episode are we actually? Was it season five?
Episode five, yeah.
Yeah. Episodes 3 and 4, I was like, this sucks. I hate this. I'm never
even
watching
this
again.
Even with that chaotic shootout at the end?
Yeah, that was cool.
Okay.
But not enough. Not enough for me.
Not enough
and then
people died.
The last episode was really good, but I also fell asleep halfway through it.
Wow.
So nice I enjoyed episode. I definitely enjoyed what I saw.
So it was even more of a time jump for you because they were time jumped at the start and then by the end you're like, whoa, they time jumped like another day.
Yeah,
I thought this episode started really kind of weakly. Used a few like annoying tropes, like, you know, it was like, it's been 66 days since the fatal shootout of blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And isn't the city different because of it?
I mean, the only
here are all the things that are different with it.
I would have loved a paperboy going, extra, extra, it's been 66 days since the. So are you the cop in that? And like Rayville calling on, get away from me.
Or maybe. Sir, are you the true detective?
No, it'd be the little redhead handing out papers. Dad! So yeah, no.
Give me my paper, you fat little pussy.
Before I fuck you with it. Something like that. Yeah. We should do a classic segment on Velcoro's parroting skills.
Yeah, we should just have like a Velcoro soundboard.
Man, before we go ahead, I just on the record, Ray Velcoro, favorite character
of the entire True Detective universe.
Yeah, season
so
one
far,
and
right?
two. Yeah, wow. I think he's more nuanced than the characters from season one. Kind of Marty Hart was the everyday guy, which was great because he needed it for like Matthew McConaughey's like second degree. Oh no, like I'm at uni for the second time doing philosophy again, and like they kind of balance well, but I just think like they were quite one-dimensional. Maybe like one was just philosophical dude and one was like, I'm shrugging at the camera basically because this guy is crazy.
Yeah
But I like the balance, I guess, of Velcoro. Kind of dips between the everyday guy with his kind of like shitty remarks towards things, but he's also got a bit of weight behind him. I don't know, that's maybe Colin's just killing it for me.
Yeah, I mean, I did notice this week, though, that he seemed to change his voice about six times
did
throughout
he?
The episode.
Oh, really?
Like, different octaves. And there are a few, like, weird, and you're like, what accent are you going for here?
So, that's what happens when you cast an Irish guy, right? In a True Detective role.
I kind of wish he was Irish. That would kind
of
work.
Yeah, that'd be cool. But yeah, you said the tropes at the start, the 66 days since the
that was just like, yeah, I mean, it kind of works with the pulpiness. You can forgive something like that. It's just a device, whatever. It was a bit, and then like, you know, Frank goes into his car and puts on the radio
and
it's just, you know, well, come on. But the really, really awful bit was the scene between Taylor Kitsch's character and his mother in the trailer.
Oh yeah.
It was 3 months pregnant, 4 months pregnant. No, well, oh, the whole scene. I thought you meant of explaining why how much time had jumped again.
No. It was just, I don't know. I just found, explaining to the audience how many days, how many months that 66 days is.
It's like, we don't need to get
We've got calculators, HBO, chill.
I haven't even explained the names of some of the people who were major characters in the show, but they were really clear that, like, yeah, he's 66 days apart. So maybe it was like, it was something weird to be precise about when a lot of things in it hasn't been. A lot of other things haven't been that precise.
Mm. Yeah, but I thought that whole scene between him and his mother was horrible.
Yeah?
Like, really, it just felt like year 12 drama.
Yeah, right.
So angsty.
I was a bit...
Yeah, I just feel like he's not... Taylor Kitsch or whatever his name is. I don't really like him in the show. Like, I'm pretty much on board with everyone else. Like, I'm even on board with, like, Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, I don't know why people are complaining about Vince Vaughn that much.
Which is great, because he's like a dumb guy trying to be smart. Like, that's the character's role, right? Like... He's like a guy who's been made his whole life and then he slipped into like, you know, white collar world. And he's like, oh, I better like I've read a book or two or like a
book. Well, no, I bet the only books he reads are like, you know, the Little Book of Parables. And that's then he can just share anecdotes.
Yeah, totally. Or like The Art of War in a Business Place, like stuff like that. Yeah, no, I see what you mean. What I like to me and for any show, especially one, I guess, which has like an 8 episode lifespan, it was like the getting shit done episode. It was kind of like Avengers Assemble. Like, it was the first time
it really felt like
it was the first time every character who's been introduced, from like the mayor's son to the Rick Springfield doctor to everybody besides Annie's dad, like everyone appeared again. And I was like, oh, so they're finally, and like even Velcoro's little tape recorder, like these things that we've been, like, it just seemed the writers were like, cool, now we've got the heavy as fuck exposition out of the way, which has been the last 4 episodes.
Yeah.
Now we can play with these people, like all the toys are here and we can just start slotting people everywhere in a sense that it makes sense. And I really like that about it. I mean, it's pretty methodical. It's pretty, you know, it's one of those episodes. It's just like a turning cog episode.
Yeah, the second half of the episode was easily my favorite.
Oh, totally.
True Detective, like, you know, half hour so far.
And like going to the cabin and like the crazy Jesus. It was just like enough weirdness, but enough like, yeah. And it was, I thought it was cool to see, Annie in Frank and Velcoro's bar.
Yes, definitely. Oh, cool. Although they need to hire someone new to play in that bar. Like,
actually, I read an interview with T-Bone Burnett, who's the music guy, and he spoke about her. The character, like, I think I was reading Pizzolatto wrote the songs as well.
Right. Oh, good.
Like, all he's what?
So
like,
that
she's in character.
Makes me hate him so much.
Because she's in character.
Really?
So it's a singer, but she's not playing her singer. Because
is she a
she's
detective?
Like, well, I don't know.
She writ the true detective,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. It was getting pretty deep, and I think he didn't want to reveal too much about it. Because someone's like, are those scenes ever happening? And he's like, well, I don't want to say.
I just think, I mean, if he wrote those songs, it would be so much more effective if he got a different person, or at least, you know, like 2 different people to be the performers. I hate that it's like just...
One.
Like, yeah.
No
like,
matter what time you go
it
to the bar.
It's like a haunted bar or something, you know what I mean? Where it's like there's the dead girl who's playing. I don't know.
Playing. Maybe it's a hologram.
How dirty did a Cyclops barmaid get it? You know, the one with the like scar through, I get it.
Oh, yeah. But that's a real,
the
Gattam's real lovely term.
There. I mean, whew.
Yeah, she wasn't into it.
Yeah. And yeah, no, I was down, man. I like the getting shit done nature of it. And even little fat redhead made an appearance on a photo on the wall in Velcoro's shitty house, which he has to leave.
Oh, and they really like they when, you know, the reveal that
Frank set him up.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the first things you know from this season. And so when that betrays you as a viewer, it's very like, oh shit, what's gonna happen now?
And
so,
when he realizes Anesty's look, and you found out, like, yeah, that was some good acting. That was you know, when he's on the street corner and the lady, Nick Fury, says like, okay, Avengers disband, and she's like, oh, by the way, we got the rapist. And he's like, what? And then that like reaction shot of him afterwards, I thought that was like, I was like, yeah, Colin Farrell can act his way out of a nutsack, and he's doing it well.
Yeah, he did good.
TD 3 more episodes to go. I mean, holy shit.
How many of the next 3 episodes do you plan to sleep through, Shiva?
Like 50% probably.
So you got 1.5 left. How exciting.
Do you remember like exactly what part of True Detective season 2 puts you to sleep? Is there a particular... Is it Taylor?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't like, I think he has some problems with women, the writer, like,
oh, he,
just
yeah.
all the female yeah. characters are just
They kind of went around addressing
just
that
so
in a
shit,
weird way.
But
like,
I kind of,
way.
Yeah, but I kind of think that, is that him actually having problems with women, or is that him trying to emulate a genre,
the genre.
That had problems with the women?
Is it the genre's
I don't know,
problem?
But I mean, like, it's across both seasons now, and I feel like he's, like, it seems like he's trying to be like, look at all these strong female characters, and like, this is why they're flawed and stuff, but it just feels really hollow.
The other thing is the guys aren't good either. Like when that, I hear that yeah. complaint, I'm like, the guys are deadbeats as well. Like everyone's a deadbeat, I think.
For sure,
yeah,
but it's
they're,
just...
they're deadbeats cast as heroes though. So like you were kind of encouraged to find the good in all the male characters, whereas the women characters, it's like...
And it's always like, oh, you're a whore in some capacity, you know? Like you want to fuck your son, you want to like trap this dude by having a baby. Like it's all of this like weird...
See, I don't know how heroic some of them are. To me,
Frank's wife finally had a really good, strong moment this week.
Yeah, but man, she is annoying. No, I find her
yeah,
annoying.
I mean, I guess so. I guess, Vince Vaughn is as annoying as her. Yeah, so for sure. I kind of...
I'm not married, but if that's what married life's like, that pillow talk, it's like, I'm going to have to go and like start reading some real like deep down philosophy.
Yeah, every night before my wife parables. And I go to bed, yeah. we read each other our favorite lines from The Art of War.
It's kind of amazing. I'm just like, wow, these guys have just got like 9 lines like stored up each.
And then she yells at me for mispronouncing Anne Rand. Anne Rand.
Yeah, married life sounds great.
That's awesome.
But the other thing is, I still think everyone's a suspect. And besides Velcora, I mean, he's the only guy that got shot by the bird dude. I'm still like, I think anyone has done it. So I don't know how heroic the rest of the males are, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, there's some far out theories out there. I mean, it's that show that gets buttloads of theories. And I think I've read a theory for basically every one of the major characters besides Velcora, who is the bird person. I mean, right. It could be female. And they're all quite, you know, the same way. We all made theories about season one. It's like, everyone could be that killer. There's some split personality shit, something with...
You going to take a guess? Should we take a guess with 3 episodes to go? Who's the killer?
Well, are they going to do another season one where it's a guy in a background? And I don't know. That, to me, wasn't as satisfying as it being like...
No, the end of True Detective season one was so disappointing.
Which a lot of people forget, but...
Yeah.
If it's one of the major three, I'd say Paul. Just because...
You say who?
Paul. The
Taylor Kitsch's character. Right.
Bike cop.
Bikey cop.
Yeah, I'd say bikey cop. I mean, he's already good at hiding one side of himself, the homosexual side. His mother looks like she could have spent some time at those parties. Once upon a time, they'd seemed, you know, we've seen the mayors have been running that family's been mayor for a long time with the old photo. Maybe Castle with his, I don't know, they mentioned they never know his dad last night. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I'm just like, could be a perfect candidate for wanting to, and worked with Velcora, so used the cop bullets to knock him out. I mean, that's my theory, maybe. But he discovered Casper's body.
Yeah. So
I'm like,
that...
was he in another state of mind? I don't know. Is he maybe in the video with Casper doing stuff that he doesn't want to destroy his image with?
Oh, that's a possible theory.
So I've been doing a lot of thinking. I mean, my prediction now, if it has to be one of the major characters,
there.
I'm putting it out there now. My money's on Kitschy.
Okay, cool. Siobhan, right. You got a prediction?
And you that can't seems say... just really thorough, but yeah.
Well, you can't say Vince Vaughn's heavy-handed acting. I mean, that's the obvious killer.
That killed True Detective season 2.
You can't say that.
But right, no, okay.
Thanks, Facebook feed.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, every Australian and American and European pop culture website.
Think piece.
Yeah. We don't need your stinking think piece.
Maybe the fat kid. He just seems like the funniest.
Shit,
he's just the funniest. He's my favorite character.
Yeah.
Just the little fat kid.
Just imagine for the rest of your life, it's like he's going to be the fat kid from True Detective season 2.
The fat little pussy.
Unless he's like one of those, he gets shredded and then in 10 years time when we're reading think pieces about True Detective season 15 or something, we'll have like...
Remember the fat
kid? Remember the fat kid?
This is him now. Feel old yet?
That great pop-up ad. And we're like, oh man, I do feel old.
He somehow becomes...
He's the president of the world.
Yeah, he's Obama now.
Yeah, he's in Ballers season 9.
I'm going to predict, it's not a major character, but I'm going to predict that it is Rachel McAdams. His dad.
Ooh.
Right?
That there
would
we
be
go.
Pretty crazy.
He's a shady
right?
dude.
But I have no theory behind it whatsoever. But
he's
like,
a shady dude.
When they pull like, I hope they have like a Scooby Doo style, like pulling the costume off the bad guy.
It was Jesus all
man. And I would have gone away with it if it weren't for you meddling True Detectives.
The dad kind of looked like the Jesus guy with the crop. Maybe he's dressed up as Jesus for the rest of the thing, and they or you know maybe the dude in the nightclub that Frank hassled the cowboy. They're like obvious. The gangster, where he said that great line, if you're Chinese, go stand in front of a tank. Like,
that's right. Like, it was great. Was it a great line?
It's great if you're, it's the 1950s. And I mean, at least he didn't do it with squinty eyes and like, you know, a full caricature.
If you were the director, would he, you piece of shit?
If I was the director of Wedding Crashes or something, yeah, sure. We would have gone that route. We would have played it for laughs, man.
I'm pretty sure in episode 2 you said Miso Soli and now this.
Come on, Vince.
let's move on to from the silver screen to the
Wait. That's the TV, the small screen.
What's the silver screen's the TV one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Silver screen's cinema.
All right. So what is the TV bronze?
I think it's just the idiot box still.
Because gold is gold class.
We're in the golden age of TV, you know. So now it's, you know, apparently. Shit.
All right. Okay. Cool. So
yeah, gold is gold class for sure.
From the nickel shit box to the silver screen, we're going to talk about Ant-Man, which was the Marvel movie that came out, the latest of 100 Marvel franchises that now take up the majority of my viewing.
They're calling
life.
It the last film of Phase 2.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
And yeah, it was the most publicly troubled of production of all of Marvel's movies so far. It was meant to be directed by Edgar Wright.
Run us through 11. Give us a blow by blow.
That's what I was doing until you fucking interrupted me.
Well, I'll do it again.
Racist.
No, it was 2003 is when it started.
Yeah, a long, long time.
Yeah.
But yeah, Edgar Wright has been attached to this project for a long time as the writer and the director. He also wrote it with the guy that directed Attack the Block.
Yes.
Joe Cornish.
And and it was, you know...
And they did Tintin together, as we said before. Mm. Yeah.
When do we say that?
Before you got here.
We just been chatting. Before podcast.
Yeah. In our separate podcast, Things You Didn't Know About Tintin and Edgar Wright. You can find it on iTunes.
I would straight up listen to that. If that was a work, Things You Didn't Know About Tintin.
It's pretty much, yeah, it's guaranteed one episode, at least for the Edgar Wright special. But yeah, they wrote that together. I think they've got good shtick.
Yeah, I love
Cornish
those guys.
Yeah, they work well together.
Edgar Wright has done one comic book movie in the past. The, I think, very underrated Scott Pilgrim movie.
Here.
Agreed.
Definitely, a lot of people. If it didn't have such a schmaltzy ending, I think a lot of people would like it a lot more.
But, and it had the problem of the ending, the film having to come up with a separate own ending because the comics weren't finished.
That's
yet.
That's true. And
which
the
is
comic,
a hard thing to do.
The comic ending is far superior to the to the movie, but the movie actually does a lot of things better than the comic as well. So I don't know, Edgar Wright's very good at adapting and doing his own stuff. And it was pretty tragic when they announced last year that he'd been. After having arguments with the studio, he'd been removed as director.
I mean, because everyone was like, well, that movie's going to rule. The test footage he showed a couple years ago with Ant-Man running down, shrinking, jumping on the gun. Like,
and it was just exciting to think of, you know, Edgar Wright doing a studio movie in a universe that we're already so familiar with.
Well, it looks like you can't do that if you're going to bring, I mean, you know, Edgar Wright's got such a look. You can watch something and you can, he's got like a distinct look. You're like, it's always the quick, the snap, you know, the snap
totally.
Stuff of things and... You can tell what it looks like. I mean, is that the thing with doing a film for Marvel? They're like, you have to paint by these numbers if you're going to be fitting in our universe. Is this how we found that out?
Well, they kept his script, but they also rewrote it with Paul Rudd, who is Ant-Man. And
he was attached with Edgar too, right? He was always Ant-Man?
He has been for a while, not since the beginning. But he rewrote the script with Adam McKay.
Which is cool, because Adam McKay is awesome.
Of everything else that's
he's
a comedy.
He's Bound It Down.
You know, The Office. No, what's it called? Anchorman. Step Brothers.
There's an office in Anchorman. I'll give you that.
Yeah, I nailed it.
and Steve
that movie's about hard work, right?
Yeah. And
paperwork,
looking at the camera alert.
Filing,
for the
shredding
camera.
Paper. But you can tell in the finished product, a lot of Edgar Wright's jokes are definitely still in there. All the highlights of the movies are absolutely Edgar Wright bits. And I spent a lot of the movie...
He said, she said scenes with the, you know, that's just straight up verbatim. You could tell that's from the script where he said this and she said this and then everyone's voicing each other. Like,
in case anyone hasn't listened, we're going to try and keep it spoiler free. There might be some light spoilers, but we will not tell you. Who gets pregnant?
And the main character is called Ant-Man. Like, sorry guys, cat's out of the fucking bag on that
one. Ant's out of the bag.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of the movie... I thought I was going to be disappointed by it, but I was pleasantly surprised at just how kind of low stakes and fun Ant-Man was. Mm. There were definitely some hammy stupidity, like stupid, just like, why Disney?
Yeah.
But the Edgar Wright jokes that they kept in there, like my favorite bit ever. And this isn't a spoiler, it's just me describing verbatim 30 seconds of the movie.
This show's got spoilers in it. Get used to it, guys. Like, it's 5 in. Come on.
Okay. I was the, like, begrudging listener just then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry you have a life.
Best,
you don't go to movies opening
the best
weekend.
Bit for me was the best joke in the whole movie was Ant-Man and the dude playing Yellow Jacket get shrunken down, trapped in a suitcase, and then one of them lands on an iPhone, activates Siri, and then says, I'm going to disintegrate you. And then Siri goes, playing
Disintegration by The Cure.
And then,
awesome.
Then you have this amazing echoey soundtrack from within the in the suitcase of The Cure playing while they shoot at each other and punch each other.
The size of ants. And yeah. then you get... Yeah. And
there were lots of great gags following
that's
that too.
That's totally
That third act was well. Gag central. It was great. The giant... You know, just the things... You know, the children's toys that you see in the trailer. That was awesome.
Like, yeah. But when he first shrinks down, it did feel a little bit like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Like,
yeah.
When but for like the new edgy generation, like... you know, that he falls onto a turntable.
Which I think is a Disney movie as well, right?
What do you mean? Oh, yeah, it is. Totally.
Do you think that is, do they make Ant-Man just to see if the world's ready for a reboot?
They used to have at Disneyland, like a massive Honey, I Shrunk the Kids
with
playground.
The blades of grass
They
and
could
stuff.
Bring that back and just
Ant-Man it up. Ant-Man me up, fam.
But yeah, I mean, there were, I don't know. Does someone else want to talk about it, whether they liked it or not?
Yeah, like, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I kind of almost wish that it had been, like, smaller stakes. Like, I'm so tired of everything being like, and then it's a suit that's going to destroy the whole world. Like, it could just be like,
what accent was that? Are you trying to
do
a Scarlet
Witch? I don't
know.
That was just my voice.
You should be on True Detective season two.
But also, like, Marvel have such not distinctive villains so far
in
all their movies.
We have got a big problem
with
that.
He was almost
fine,
good.
But he was like just a dude in a suit.
Yeah, he's not really a character from the comics.
He was like he looked like Lex Luthor, but he was no Lex Luthor.
He was the same Ironmonger type of villain. Like, I'm going to have the same tech as you, basically. It was very Iron Man. Which isn't a bad thing, I found. I liked the fact the stake... It was like, I thought the heistiness was brilliant. Like, all the heist planning. Like, it was like... I thought that was great. If they were going to rip off a genre, like, that was cool. Where everything else has been pretty straight up action. I mean, Guardians had the sci-fi stuff, which they couldn't do in the other films. But I just liked... Yeah, I liked the whole heist stuff. And, like, the training for the heist, where it's not, like, discovering your powers. And, wow, look at it. It was kind of like... all for a purpose to steal something, and I like that kind of...
It's also the most I've liked Paul Rudd in a movie in a long while.
He was great, wasn't he?
He was so... Like, I haven't seen him, like, this kind of fun and up for it since, like, I don't know, like, Wet Hot American Summer or something. Like, he had no cynicism to his role.
Totally. And I can totally tell, like, he's the one I'm looking forward to when they're all on screen together with the eventual, like, Avengers team.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I'm like, it'll be so cool to see Paul Rudd, like... out jerking, not in a jerk way, but just out jerking Tony Stark and stuff. You know
right,
what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Like, he's kind of, and I like the fact he's not like this rich dude, or he's not an American hero or a scientist or anything. Like,
he shrinks Thor's hammer at some point. That would be pretty cool.
That'd be good.
That would be pretty funny.
I mean, I found it similar in spirit, I guess, to Guardians a lot, where it was kind of like, let's do a bit of a genre movie.
Yeah, but I found Guardians of the Galaxy, I enjoyed it, but the jokes never landed with me, whereas all the jokes in Ant-Man really, like, they actually, I was like...
Well, it was written by funny people.
I was slapping my thighs.
Was this certified Levin's knee slapper?
That's thigh slapper.
Thigh slapper.
I am a little higher.
You didn't
higher.
Go for the knees?
No, knee, I got a better sound from the thighs.
It's more audible. I mean, you had great comedic dudes. You had Greg Turkington in a mad cameo.
Yeah, Neil Hamburger. It's like the first weird cameo.
Yeah.
I reckon I spend like most of Marvel movies whispering who the actors are to my wife and then telling them what else they've been in because she never remembers who
Amazing.
Those names are.
Nate does the same thing. My boyfriend thought for ages that the who they'd cast as Ant-Man was Paul Giamatti.
Amazing. Now that's
Paul
what
Rudd.
I want to see.
Yeah, he heard Paul Rudd. And
he was great
like,
as the Rhino.
Paul Giamatti. He was like, that's such a
I
weird
get
casting,
in this
but I love it.
Suit. Like, you can see him just yelling at people. Sweating.
But he was so into it. And he was so disappointed when I was like, no, Paul Rudd. Like, the guy from Clueless.
He's probably the only person in the world that's disappointed that Paul Giamatti is not Ant-Man.
Yeah, exactly.
That's ballsy as fuck for Disney, though. Let's let a 50-plus, like, rotund bald man be, like, a poster child.
Speaking of all those things except bald, I really enjoyed watching Michael Douglas again.
Yeah, he was great.
That was good.
Shout-outs to... Roger Sterling, opening scene.
Oh, yep, that was
loved
good too.
John Slattery.
And did you notice, I don't know if you guys watched the extended Marvel TV universe.
No, I'm still catching up on the show.
I'm already married, so I can say things like that without...
he's taken, ladies.
There was, you had in that first scene, the flashback to the 80s, you had Michael Douglas alongside an aged Peggy Carter.
Mm-hmm. Whose Cap's?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Agent Carter.
Same
she was
actress,
there.
She
she was, you know,
Hayley Atwell
had Gray. And then you also had the actor who plays Howard Stark, Tony Stark. He was in that scene as well.
Yeah,
cool.
He's been.
So I mean,
he was in Iron Man 2. Was Tony Stark's dad when they did like the?
Yeah, it's little scenes like that I love about Marvel. But then it's extent. Like, I mean, a small spoiler in the middle of the movie. Ant-Man has to break into what he thinks is an abandoned place. It turns out to be the Avengers warehouse, and Falcon is there to try and stop him. It's cute. It's a funny little
scene.
It's
a bit long, I thought, that scene.
But I reckon that may have been the reason that Edgar Wright left.
Yeah. I'm it's probably like you're contractually obliged to put an Avenger in here.
There are smaller ties to the Marvel universe that I thought were really great and seamless, like the opening scene and you know suggesting that Hank Pym had been part of S.H.I.E.L.D. to begin with and
Almost like kicked out, like I'll go do my own thing.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
That was
I thought that really worked, but then I thought like tacking it in there. I mean, it was a fun scene, and it certainly wasn't necessary.
With shared universe with this. Hats off to him because they're like the first guys who are doing it for so long. Like almost, it's gonna be 10 years soon of having like a shared cinema universe, like multi franchise. It's crazy. It's baffling, yes, but in the right hands, you can do it super well. But if you just do it like a little bit too irksome or a little bit too coincidental and like cutesy, I think that's when it falls flat, and you're like, oh, that was a waste of.
It feels like a Comic-Con trailer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's when you like, oh, when you have a Thor takes a super spy in Avengers 2 side story. Like that. You're just like, well, this is adding nothing.
We know you're putting out more movies, Marvel. You're making so much money. Like, you don't need to remind
every
us.
Every bus I walk past tells me this. Like, I absolutely know you've got more. In fact, the two bonus scenes at the end of the movie are going to remind me once again.
Can we talk about those bonus scenes?
Yeah.
I thought after the first one, I was like, oh, is that it?
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was.
The wasp suit.
Yeah. Oh, can we talk about her for a minute?
Yeah.
Because the one thing that Marvel does worse than villains is female characters.
Holy moly.
They make Nick Pizzolatto look like a goddamn feminist. Yeah. Like, seriously.
I mean, we don't even get to see like the original wasp for like more than 2 seconds.
I think because they're waiting for her to be a big reveal. Michael Douglas has been in interviews this week saying he wants Catherine Zeta-Jones to be wasp.
Are you serious?
I kind of like that. I think that would kind
of be
okay.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I was thinking how cool would it be, and they'll probably do it on one stage, like an 80s based S.H.I.E.L.D., like a TV show or a movie, with the original crew.
The next Agent Carter is jumping forward a decade, so it goes from the 50s to the 60s.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sick.
And it's set in L.A. I really like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. And I kind of got so accustomed to the way that they move the plots along. Like they both started shittily, and Agent Carter didn't really... It had a great couple of episodes, but it ended really badly. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., on the other hand, actually...
Opposite, right?
Well, the first, like, two-thirds of that of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s first season is awful. But if you sit through it, you get to know the characters, you're rewarded with the last third, which is so great.
It's kind of a trope of network shows. I remember reading, so I think it was actually Joss Whedon, too, and he's like, whenever you're making a show for a non-cable channel, you're basically told the first 7 episodes have to be... actually treat them as 7 first episodes because we're not picturing people watching this every week, so anyone can jump in for the first 7. And that kind of was really true when I watched S.H.I.E.L.D. It's just kind of like they were just monster of the week type of stories, and
yeah,
but then the kind of continuous plot kicks in and you're like, that's
pays off really well, and it, you know, it ties into the movies quite well.
You know, my dad tricked my mom, who he's heaps into comics and comic films. He tricked my mom into watching Peggy Carter because she likes crime shows and she likes strong female characters. And I guess, you know, you're calling a show Agent Peggy Carter. I think she thought it was like Franny Fisher or something. Like, oh, like a lady in her 40s.
Cody
like,
so, Banks.
Yeah, like Agent. Yeah. But I think he was like, and I think he kind of sold it to her as that as well. He's like, hey, let's watch this show. And like, she just probably thought Marvel was just like, you know.
Like, oh, it's a Marvel. It's a cinematic Marvel on TV.
It's about damn time. And then like, I think I pulled her up and I'm like, oh, I hear you watching like a Marvel show. And she's like, what? No, I'm not into that stuff. I'm like, and my dad's like, surprise, I tricked you into watching a Marvel show and it's not about superheroes. And she was like, oh wow, like touche, papa, you know. Yeah. I thought it was pretty funny.
They do. Peggy Carter is actually one of the few really great, especially from the show. Hayley Atwell, who plays her, is so good.
Really good.
And I, you know, it's great to have a little cameo in Ant-Man, but when you didn't even notice it.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point?
Like, they put
and she had a tiny moment in
Cap 2.
Age of Ultron as well.
And Cap 2, which he goes and visits her and she's super old.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But
she kind of looked like a slightly younger version of the
She looks a lot like her in Ant-Man.
Yeah, right.
But, they aged
Michael Douglas really well. I was like, looks really good. Yeah. Like, I was surprised that it didn't look like
that. I was actually just using footage from the game.
That Goatee game, though. I'm glad there's a new Goatee to rival Tony Stark.
There's a new Goatee in town.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's wispier.
I liked his tech, too. I really liked this one. He had, like, the shitty garage tech with, like, 80s technology from when he was part of S.H.I.E.L.D. I thought I really liked seeing them using kind of... And which is why he thought it was a warehouse and not an Avengers, like, thing. I thought that was kind of cool.
But look, the biggest issue that from Ant-Man, and before we talk about the little spoiler and talk about the end credits scene, like, again, it's another movie that offers nothing in the way of decent female characters to a universe that needs them desperately.
It was so frustrating to watch because, like, she was really dull, but she was also seemed massively competent. And it was so infuriating to have him just be like, no, for no reason. You know, like, I wish that there had been a better reason other than, I love you too much.
I have to protect you and you're a woman. You'll die.
Yeah, exactly. Because she seemed like... like she was like a crazy judo expert.
Yeah. I mean, look, the original Wasp died or disappeared a hero, so at least you get that. But I mean, I feel like the studios now are just like, no, instead of like giving these characters nuance, we'll just have them be headstrong and say that they did something heroic.
They're
going to
operate
actually
from the sidelines. They're going to be like, the door's now open. I'm assisting you in the in the great task, but I'm not going to be doing it myself.
Or like, hey, I can punch harder than you.
Yeah.
But I'm still hot.
But I wear a suit, and so I can't do like crazy things because I earn a lot of money. I recognize that. The writers recognize that I can get equal pay now. But yeah, the final scene. The final scene.
And also, before we get to that, though, what did you think of the dynamic duo of T.I. and John Michael Cena?
Michael Peña.
Michael Peña.
Michael Peña was Michael awesome. He was my favorite thing.
Yeah,
His delivery, like when he plays that type of character,
he just played the hell out of the stereotype. Yeah. He does it really. Like,
he does it super well. Like in Serve and Protect, the Seth Rogen Moorcock movie. Not to be mistaken with Paul Blart.
And that really underrated Jesse Eisenberg and Aziz Ansari movie about the pizza delivery.
30 minutes late.
He's great in that too.
Yeah.
He was excellent in Eastbound and Down.
Yeah, totally. No, he's awesome. And I really like that he played that character. That opening line of his, he was like, yeah, my mom's dead and my dad's dead. And I just went, and I was like,
I got this van though.
It was like really fun. I was like, whoa, Marvel's never really had like a joke, like a funny, like weird black joke, like black humor joke like that, you know? Yeah. They're kind of usually physical gags or something. And I was like, oh, that was really funny.
The whole thing was definitely like one of those movies that I feel like, I mean, to bring it back to The Mask again, but like, you know, those movies that you just watch when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And it's just like this really fun romp.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
That's a movie. That's probably, I reckon that'll be when my son gets really obsessed with superhero movies, that might be one of the most watched ones. Cause it's, you know, so fun.
I think I was like also surprised it actually happened just cause when something's in development hell for so long now, you know about it and you know it's almost like a saga. Like, you know, you just see tweets of people and people get passive aggressive and there's a lot of, you can tell like the studio is panicking and they start delaying films releases. But I was like, I'm surprised it actually was like a pretty functional three-act movie. Like you could see bits where one bit I didn't like, and this is a thing where I reckon it was like a line left over from another script or an insertion of like a new line. But the villain, Yellow Jacket, he was going kind of crazy. And then out of nowhere, what's her name? The Wasp. Michael Douglas's daughter just goes, oh, you're acting weird because you're so exposed to the serum. And it's like, hang on. Has that been explained before?
No,
like,
that's right. That was weird.
It was just weird. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm getting angry because I've been around serum so much. I'm like, what? What's serum? Like, what are you talking about?
They were just kind of like, oh, it started to change me. That was very...
it was a Frankenstein transformation.
Never,
and I would have accepted it if they showed you at the start, like a Bruce Banner type thing. But it was just introduced nowhere. I was like, oh yeah, don't worry, man. It's just the serum. Be cool. And I was like, what? That's just weird. It's like right at the end of the... like, don't. Yeah.
The final credit scene, and if you don't want spoilers, skip forward 1 minute because we won't spend long on this.
No.
But the final credit scene involves Captain America, Falcon, and
Winter Soldier. And it was shot by the Russo. It's actually shot... it's a scene apparently out of...
Civil War.
Yeah.
I'm just made me really excited for Civil War.
It looked like a movie again. Like Ant-Man was kind of like...
I know. So that was the thing. So you made a comment a couple episodes ago about the Marvel movies being fun, but they're not very cinematic. They're not films. This absolutely like proves your point.
And it reminds you that this Winter Soldier totally was. Like Winter Soldier was the best looking out of all the Marvel films.
And the best structured. And so the guys that did that, who is it? Anthony and Joe Russo?
Yeah, the guys that did all the Community, hilarious paintball like gun episodes of Community, like the paintballs or whatever. And they're doing Infinity War, right?
Yeah. And I'm really, really excited that those movies are in their hands.
Oh, totally. I think you can tell Joss just didn't give a shit anymore, and I think they're far more competent filmmakers.
They're the only ones that handled Black Widow really well. Like that,
yeah,
that's
true.
She's the star of Winter Soldier.
I forgot about that. Is a time Marvel has done a female character super awesomely. Like that was she was amazing in Cap 2.
You were like, why doesn't she have her own movie?
I don't know.
And then in Ultron, they gave her the superpower of being barren.
Yeah. It was just like, thanks
so
a lot.
Still so bad.
It's so bad. I saw Joss Whedon speaking about it recently in an interview because I was speaking about the Blu-ray coming out soon. He's like, there's half an hour missing of that film. And he's like, no, I'm really proud of this cut. And it's like, I got really personal with it and stuff. I'm like, is Joss Whedon Barrett? Yeah. But he's like, there's a lot of stuff in there that's really hard for me to talk about.
He tried to get pregnant once. And for some reason, it couldn't happen. So like, he decided to share those thoughts and memories with a female character. What other like prominent Marvel girls should be in this movie?
Yeah, it's hard because so many of the Marvel female heroes...
X-Men.
They're owned by other studios.
The best ones are X-Men. Yeah. But then also on top of that, they're like female versions of male characters. Like, I love She-Hulk, and I think it'd be sick to see like a really sick like legal procedural...
Netflix series. That'd be perfect.
She-Hulk, I think that'd be amazing. But then you have to be like, oh, it's Hulk's cousin.
Yeah,
like,
it's she's never just a character in her own right. You know? I mean, I thought Jubilee was super cool from the X-Men TV series, and she was like... kind of a background character in the comics, but they kind of told the animated series through her eyes, I guess, like she was a young new mutant. And I thought that she was like a cool character. She had her own powers that stood on their own. She wasn't like a Ms. or a she version
all,
of the
all of the female characters in the X-Men cartoon series that we grew up with from memory. I don't
Rogue
think
is it, sick.
Well, no, none of them need to be saved by the male characters every episode. I think that was the biggest thing.
Yeah.
I think it'd be cool. Like, I mean, they say they're going to do Captain Marvel. I really don't care about Captain Marvel. She's become such a huge character in the last couple of years. Mm. And I feel like I've missed the boat on some level. Like, she's fine, but I just don't have an attachment to her.
No, totally.
But Ms. Marvel, the new character, the, like, Pakistani-American. She's great. And I would be really... I think Marvel would be really silly if they weren't looking at her developing her for, like, a TV show at least or something.
Yeah, because it's not... Great. Yeah. And also, like, as well as needing, more female characters in the Marvel universe, there needs to be also more youthful perspectives. Yeah. And I think what Ms. Marvel is absolutely... When you read that book, you're watching... a teenager cope with being and, yeah, and it's really
it's that golden era of Spider-Man in high school shit.
I hope they do it right with this white man that they've cast, but you've got a teenage Spider-Man
entering,
and hopefully that you do get some of that youthful enthusiasm instead of this kind of like grizzled man that's either fucked up a few times in his life before or is over the world that he's a part of. Every character is old beyond their years in
Marvel and Kevin, everyone's like hell bent on saying like we're keeping him in high school, like this is the golden age. I read the writers the other day, and I was glancing in the the varieties as you and I do as film connoisseur. No, I just saw it online and was like, the guys of the Vacation reboot are writing this, and I'm like, oh, it's a first time writing team, that's kind of weird. One of them is Sam from Freaks and Geeks. So who knows, getting bullied in high school better than anybody. I don't know this. He's like, he's written the new Vacation. I was like, oh shit, in that case, it's a guy who was in Freaks and Geeks.
Don't get your hopes up too much, man. Because he also wrote, what was it? How to Kill Your Boss or whatever.
I don't know that.
What's Horrible Bosses?
Horrible Bosses, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
How to Kill Your Boss.
No, that was the pitch.
That's exactly it.
That was the pitch.
I've seen both of those stupid movies.
And I've seen the first one.
Both on planes. So
imagine if it was How to Kill Your Principal, though. I mean, that's what you're going to be getting. But I don't know. I thought that if someone can get that that bullied high school thing, he kind of went through it a bit. I mean, obviously on screen and had no say in the script, but... I don't know. Hopefully there's some of that cool high school shit that made Freaks and Geeks.
I actually
so
watched a Freaks and Geeks bloopers reel this week, which I haven't seen in a while. He has all the sweetest moments in the blooper reel. Yeah.
Yeah.
He just fucks up like and keeps saying like mixing up words in a sentence and stuff like that. It's really, really
great. What a sweetie pie.
Absolute sweetie pie. I loved Horror Bosses, Bubble Bosses too.
Well, it explains the two tattoos you recently got in Bali. That proclaims your love for both of them.
I got Horrible Bosses 1 on my forehead, and on the back of my head, I shaved the hair around Horrible Bosses 2.
The guy's
2.
Like, do you want this to go around the whole way? Like, I got a feeling like, number 2's coming. Yeah. I'm loving it.
Are you sure you don't want me to just put a 2 after the Horrible Bosses tattoo?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Do we already have? No.
Trust me.
Write the
They're
whole
very
thing
separate.
Again.
Speaking of a movie, I just want to say quickly, we're speaking about a movie that was in like famous development hell. A doco came out this week based on another comic book movie, which never happened. And that was, it's called The Death of Superman Lives. And elevator pitch, Superman Lives was a film that was supposed to come out in 1998. Tim Burton directed Superman film starring Nicolas Cage as Superman. Because of Batman and Robin and how fucked that was, it didn't happen. There's only been bits of information leaking out over the last, 10 years, almost 20 years now or so.
Mostly much laughed at photos of Nick
Mostly
Cage
memes.
In the Superman outfit.
Mostly edgy memes. terrible photos, which in the documentary is interesting. They said that is a photo of a video footage. They actually picked the shot of him blinking to make it even worse. So it was that photo went around for studios to just ridicule the film even more. The doco, anyway, just goes into detail. Kevin Smith's in it. He wrote the first draft. Tim Burton's in it, which I was like surprised he was going to be in it. John Peters is hilarious producer who, if you YouTube Kevin Smith, John Peters, you get an amazing bit of Kevin Smith just speaking about this ridiculous Hollywood producer who was obsessed with getting a giant spider in a movie for about 20 years. And he finally did it with Wild Wild West. it was great. And it's just cool. I love those things like Beach Boys album, the Smile album, stuff like things that were supposed to be coming out and never did, and you kind of see all the hard work. And I was surprised Tim Burton's like, oh, this still like haunts me every day. Like, this was a movie I really wanted to make. And you know, he goes through like a lot of movies like The Day the Earth Stood Still and these movies about an alien coming to Earth and trying to learn about human life. And he's like, I wanted to tell that story, have like a really sort of solitary Superman who's trying to fit. And he had this like, see Nicolas Cage wearing like Mickey Mouse shirts and mismatched clothes, and he would have a room in his apartment of just newspaper clippings of humans and human life because he was just trying to practice to be a human. He's like, the whole movie was about that. And I was like, that sounds like such a cool take. And I don't know.
I love watching Nick Cage.
Oh, man. As you know, I had a short-lived Nicolas Cage series on a Sydney radio station for a while where I explore. And yeah, he's amazing. He's the man for the job. I mean, his son is called Kal-El.
Yeah, he's like the world's biggest Superman fan. He had like a copy of Action Comics #1 that was stolen.
And that's getting made into a film now.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, it's just like...
Plus he's nuts.
Yeah, and it's just a shame they didn't get to do it. I think you would have really brought something awesome to Superman, which we will never see now because it's so...
Hopefully one of the studios will get him to play someone.
Well, I mean, I think he kind of got to do it with
Ghost Rider. And he was Ghost Rider.
We did it with Kick... I think he got his like... I'm going to bring something weird to kick. You know what I mean?
Well,
I
was kind of
like, yeah, it was amazing. And he like, yeah, he turned it up to like Nick Cage 10 on that. And I don't know. There was a glimpse maybe, but it's totally worth checking out. It's online. The end by me.
Potentially that movie could have been better than DC's upcoming movies. Let's talk about them. Segway returns. Segway and Robin.
Oh yeah, Segway and Robin.
Batman is being being put into production.
Rebooted?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, who knows? We've got Batman versus Superman with Ben Affleck as Batman coming out soon. Then we've got Suicide Squad. We've talked about it every week.
Listen to last week's episode, you dummy. If you're starting number five.
After that, we've got a new Batman movie directed by Ben Affleck, and he's co-writing it with a comic writer called Geoff Johns. Now, if you don't read comics, that name might not be familiar with you. And if you do read comics, you probably hate seeing that name.
Because... Give me a rap sheet, because I told you guys earlier, like, I went through a period where I just read buttloads of Batman, buttloads of Superman. And I know Geoff Johns' name popped up a lot of times, but I just don't know which runs or what plot lines. Like, give me the best.
Well, I mean, I think Geoff Johns is quite comparable to Brian Bendis, who is the big blockbuster writer that Marvel have. The biggest difference between them, besides Geoff Johns having a lovely head of hair.
Ooh.
Ouch.
What a burn.
Sorry, BMB.
Take that, BMB.
is that Geoff Johns actually doesn't have any creator-owned comics.
Okay.
He's pretty much, for the greater part of the last 20, sorry, the last, yeah, last 20 years, he's written almost exclusively for DC. Mm.
And he loves, and, like, Dick Donner era Superman, right? Like, he always writes kind
he,
of...
Well, he yeah. actually got to write with Richard Donner.
He wrote it.
Yeah, Richard Donner joined him for a few really great comics, with Action Comics.
Also, Richard Donner was, like, his sort of mentor.
Of course, yeah.
Jeff Johns was originally, like, a screenwriter, and he interned for Richard Donner. And they're actually, like, pretty
Because I know
tight,
he's into
apparently.
That mad era.
Yeah, there's
like
an amazing... Classic. Episode to bring up Kevin Smith again, which is something I never thought we'd do twice in
crying?
An episode.
You-
Kevin Smith has a great podcast called Fat Man on Batman, and Jeff Johns was a guest on that, and he goes through his friendship and working with Richard Donner. I completely forgot about that, but that's an amazing.
I just know
episode.
He always writes Superman like as Dick Donner era Superman as well, like the values. And-
yeah, mm. Well, I also feel like that gives you a really good grounding as to who, like, the way Jeff Johns sees the DC universe, and like he very much has like this real affection for like the Silver Age and that sort of thing, and it's
which
pretty,
I think is
pretty
important
for
a writer
sure.
to have. Like, I think all my favorite DC writers have that, like, you know, James Robinson, Mark Waid. They have that love of Rucka of how things used to be. Rucka not so much. Rucka and Brubaker kind of sort of maybe the old crime comics, but not so much DC score. Oh, who knows?
I don't know. That's not my place to say. Rucka was cool when he brought Catman and the whole Catwoman stuff.
Right, that's Brubaker.
Oh, Brubaker. Shit, sorry. Yeah. No, I thought that was cool. Like,
I said.
I got confused.
But that is a good comic. So
yeah. That was bringing some Silver Age stuff, you know, like bringing that kind of a...
Jeff Johns before he wrote for... Well, no, while he was writing for DC, but before he was like DC's biggest writer, actually wrote 20 issues of The Avengers.
Really?
Which I've never run.
What,
have you read. Have you read?
Is it like
What's
80s?
That?
They're so bad.
They're so, bad. So bad. Wow, because they're like kind of
it's
well
like, it's
regarded.
Peaked. Really?
Yeah.
I'm so shocked by that because I've read... Not the whole thing, but it's not good, I don't think. And there's one of the weirdest scenes ever in it. There's like this creepy, weird one panel sex scene between the Wasp and Ant-Man.
I've read that
issue.
Oh
my god.
Yeah.
Where
I didn't know that was him writing that.
Ant-Man is tiny.
Holy
and
shit.
You just see him emerge from the sheets.
In between her boobs, isn't it?
I don't know.
Isn't
I think it's slightly
crass,
lower
it?
Because he is like dripping.
Holy shit.
Disgusting.
I heard that's in Ant-Man too. That's amazing. That's so cool.
That's where the Wasp is.
That's where she is. She's up. She's in Michael Douglas's butthole. Holy moly, that's
it's
hilarious.
So full.
The microverse is just Michael Douglas's butt.
Did you read just quickly, did you read the Atom Convergence 2-issue miniseries? I'm pretty sure no one did.
No, I didn't. No.
Oh, it's just really like just Ryan Choi was living in. That's very, very specific. Sorry.
The Atom is the Ant-Man of
DC.
The DC.
Right?
And one Ant-Man died, and then the other Ant-Man started hallucinating that he like could hear him, and then it turned out he was in his brain, and he grew another one out of his hand.
Wow.
And so Ryan
comics
Choi
right,
was alive.
Guys.
Comics. Anyway, sorry.
Wow.
That was just.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So Jeff Johns, I guess the...
So it was exclusively DC after that ill-fated sex from...
Who knows why they were like, oh, look at this magic he's doing over at Marvel. We've got
to
lock
Can't
him
Can't wait to see
down.
Superman like a snap Lois in half. Let's bring this one in.
So I went through everything that he's written earlier today and kind of went through everything that I've read by him. And I thought I'd go through... This is not quite chronological,
should
but...
Should we do a sting just for this one segment that we're going to do for
once? Yeah, Siobhan, you want to sing the Jeff Johns, This Is Your Life.
Boop, 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 boop. No, I don't know.
It's perfect.
That's great.
We can
yeah,
remix
we'll do
that.
The segment again.
I know Flume. It's fine. We can turn that into a 4-minute opus. I thought I'd go through some of Jeff Johns' kind of better-known comics.
Sure.
At least the ones that I've read. Mm. I've probably missed a few, but...
Wait, before we go on, can I ask for me and all the people at home... Is he still writing for DC?
Absolutely.
Like
he's DC's right? chief creative officer.
Mm. So he's like the Joe...
The CCO, I believe that stands
for.
So he is pretty much... He writes Justice League for DC
now. He's writing Justice League at the moment. Is that all he's writing?
No, he just finished a Superman run.
He did Aquaman for a while.
I feel like I read recently that he's moving on to something else pretty soon.
Yeah.
He's possibly doing Flash again or something. No,
I
don't know. Yeah, who knows? But yeah, he writes their big events. He wrote Forever Evil, which was DC's big event last year, and I think he's writing their event this year too.
Do we know what that's called yet?
No, I don't know. Maybe Still Evil.
Weird sex scenes.
But Jeff Johns started out, I guess, the big DC comic. The first one that he really started to get a name for himself was Stars and Stripe, STRIPE.
Yeah. Have you read it?
I've read like one issue of it.
I love it.
You love it?
It's the first thing that he wrote at DC. And it's pretty sweet because his younger sister died in a plane crash when he was younger. And so he like created this character based on the sort of classic Star-Spangled Kid, but based it on his younger sister.
Yeah, right.
And it's just a really sweet, like, it's mostly about this teenage girl dealing with her stepdad, who also happens to be a superhero who used to fight crime in a big, like, Americana robot suit.
Whoa.
And she becomes, like, the Star-Spangled Kid, and he's her sidekick, and she's like,
What era was that, like, 90s?
Yeah, late 90s.
So he's been around, like, his big star was late 90s.
Yeah, and that was like the, sure. And then from there he was able to write those characters into the Justice Society of America, the JSA, which is a very confusing comic to describe to anyone because it is started out as the first superheroes that DC wrote in the 30s.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
with the big superhero team, and then
it was after Infinite Crisis.
After a few decades, they decided to move those heroes. After superhero comics weren't popular anymore, they moved them to Earth 2, and then...
So that's like the old Flash with the...
There's basically a second Earth, and then a few crisis events happened, and then it turns out they live on the same Earth, and then a time crisis happens, and they all get too old except three of them.
Yep.
So the run that of JSA that Geoff Johns writes is a mixture of the old superheroes and the young superheroes who the old superheroes are training to become superheroes.
These new superheroes are going to have to show these...
These ain't your granddaddy's superheroes.
Just the way things were.
But that is that, like... Geoff Johns' JSA run is probably one of my favorite superhero comics ever, which I do say a lot, but it is. It was just really, he took all these characters and really had a lot of space to play around with them because no one really cared.
Many of my favorite authors, like,
for sure,
thrive.
Like Grant Morrison does that really well. Like, a whole bunch of people can do that super well.
The new True Detective, the new Hey Fam drinking game is you get to drink as soon as Angus brings up Grant Morrison.
I love Grant Morrison. His Batman run is epic.
Two Don't shots if you bring up Grant Morrison's Batman run.
Yeah.
I feel like it, like, as well as having like such love for these old, you know, somewhat forgotten characters, he also will always write young characters really well, which is what Brian Bendis over at Marvel does really well as well. You kind of get this like
Miles Morales.
Yeah, like you get like a real vibrant. Like, you know, like the new eyes looking at this crazy Earth in front of him. Have you read like his entire JSA run?
I've read all of it.
It's like almost 100 comics.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Because he stopped writing it for a while and then he came back to it.
Yeah.
I've read a few books and crossovers and stuff from that run. It's all really good.
Yeah, I enjoy it a lot. Like, I mean, it is definitely that sort of... It was when DC very much had that identity of like legacy. So there are all these like generations of characters and there's like the Flash family and like they're all really close. And like the JSA was just this really nice, just simple, like superhero book.
It was like,
you know,
reading a museum.
Yeah, it kind of was. Like, it was just nice. And there were all these like excellent new young characters and he was really making an effort for it to be like diverse and cool. And
simpler times.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Family first.
Yeah, I really like it when comics embrace their past instead of, you know, wiping it
clean. Retconning shit all the time. Like, it's retcon every 2 years.
People
now,
don't need to go like, but that happened in this blah blah blah. I feel like you should just gotta let go of that when you're
reading.
But also,
like, that's the beauty of comics. People are gonna change the way your favorite characters look. They're gonna change the way they think. It's like, that's the beauty of the medium. There's gonna be these different artists that are dipping in and out of things they've created or things that they love them being created by other people. That's the beauty of that medium. Like, if you don't like that medium, go watch like a game show or something. I don't know.
Oh man, when they retconned Deal or No Deal.
When they retconned Man Oh Man, I was like, okay, I thought I'd thought of everything.
I thought characters got slimed in this show. after JSA is a really great revision of one of DC's biggest comics from the 80s. It's Teen Titans. Geoff Johns did, and that I know I've actually heard you several times, Siobhan, say that's your favorite comic run ever.
It is. It's like, that's the first superhero. That's like what got me into superhero comics. You know, like, I was sort of buying single issues here and there, but that's the first thing that
Teen
I
Titans
collected
is,
and read.
So it's kind of like Teen Justice League, right?
Or like, more, it's almost like their answer to the X-Men.
Yeah, well, it directly was like the Teen Titans was created as a response
young,
to X-Men.
And that's when they put Nightwing in for the first time, right? Or...
Yeah, well, Nightwing, he became Nightwing in the pages of that's Teen right. Titans.
Disco suited Nightwing.
Yes, my favorite.
Forget.
The best Nightwing.
Yeah.
There's this hilarious scene where he, like, is telling the rest of the team that he's like, I'm leaving Robin behind. And he like weirdly like takes off all his clothes, but while giving this really straight speech, and then gets dressed again with this big disco collar. And
pops his collar.
Yeah, he's like, no way.
Amazing.
Are there some particular characters in that Teen Titans run that like that's like the iteration of that character that you think straight away?
Yeah, like John's run.
Yeah.
Because you have like
He did such well. The core team is Superboy, Connor Kent, rather than like Superman from the past.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Drake,
and it's the best Tim Drake written.
The best Tim Drake.
Tim Drake's my fave. Yeah, he's probably my favorite Robin.
Cassie Sandsmark, who's Wonder Girl. Starfire, actually really well written, and I really like Starfire as a character. I know she's really silly, but like I just really like her. Beast Boy and Cyborg, and that's sort of the main team. Oh, and Raven as well, Raven. And then other people sort of come and go, and he brings new characters in.
Is there a leader of the Teen Titans, or is it kind of like...
Cyborg. Cyborg's the leader,
cool.
Technically, but Tim's very much the leader in the field, I think.
It's that Batman family jag, you know? You're always going to have to
and
try to...
It kind of kicked off, the first issue of that kicks off with, like, Robin keeping the team a secret from Batman, and that's, like, he's really breaking away from Batman.
I've read the Batman universe while that's happening, and it's like CT, like when he's kind of like hiding, and he's like, "Where's Tim these days?" Like, yeah,
that's the one problem with going back and trying to recommend these comics to people that don't read lots of comics, because there's nothing more frustrating. It's like, I've got to go over here now, and then that character died. Read what happens here.
That's part of the reason that like I got into superhero comics, because all this stuff was happening like off page, and I was like, but what? Why is everyone dead now? Why is Superboy dead? Now I have to read Infinite Crisis. What?
Gonna have them all.
The Flash, he did a really great Flash run in which he expanded on a lot of the Flash Rogues gallery, especially Captain Cold, who's one of my favorite characters of all time.
You told me Flash Rogues gallery is like your favorite.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe.
Yeah, he really loves some silly villains. Like, even looking at Teen Titans, the Teen Titans villains are so silly. It's all like, well, like Deathstroke, but whatever. But there's like,
I got a Deathstroke Lego figure the other day.
You got a what?
I got a Deathstroke Lego figure the other day. Comes in a sweet boat. Anyway, continue.
My favorite Teen Titans villains are, I can't remember what the team they're in, but they're led by this guy called The Brain, and he's a brain in a jar with a vaguely sort of German voice a little bit, and he's always just trying to get his body back. But his sidekick,
classic brain though, right?
But his sidekick is this gorilla who is also a French guerrilla fighter. So he's got like a beret and stuff. And his name's Monsieur Malat. And they're in a relationship. And they're in love.
Yeah.
And
really?
It's so beautiful and so great.
So wait, he is a gorilla?
Yeah, he's a
There's at least three gorilla characters.
They're all villains gorilla. Too, right?
Yeah. There's DC Ultra Humanite.
Gorilla Grodd.
And the whole like, you know, gorilla city.
Of course, yeah.
Monsieur Malat and Detective Chimp. I could keep going.
The primate DC universe.
King Shark, like they've got some really funny, like just animal guys, and you just kind of have to go, oh, I guess there's animal guys around here. That's cool.
We talked about it briefly, but Geoff Johns had a pretty significant run on Action Comics and Superman Comics concurrently.
Yeah.
He wrote two really great stories with Richard Donner. Son of Krypton, which is about Christopher Kent, who is a child that may or may not be from Krypton that comes down to Earth, and Zod comes back to claim him, and like it's really awesome. He wrote a really great book called Brainiac, which is all about. Do you remember that one?
Brainiac's super good.
That's one of my top three. Like, you know, just after All Star Superman or something like that.
Yep.
Grant Morrison, take a shot.
Who wrote Birthright? Am I thinking of someone else?
Birthright is Mark Waid.
Yeah.
Mark Waid. There's another version.
After that, Geoff Johns did Secret Origin.
That's right.
I think it's really good. And Gary Frank is really brilliant on art in that. He can't draw kids. They all look really creepy, but I think he still nails it.
I know a lot of people complain about Superman being a shit character because they've never read a really good Superman story.
Yeah.
But those three, Last Son of Krypton, Brainiac, and Secret Origin, all by Geoff Johns, they will, you know, one, prove to you that Geoff Johns is a pretty great writer.
Yeah.
It's a and shit also argument three, to have with people like who've two, seen... like a movie, and they're like, "Oh, Superman's boring."
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Wait, no, you've just seen him written.
Yeah,
like-
Bianca, my wife. Listen to that logic.
Take a shot.
She hates Superman, bro.
It's so hard to tell people that Superman's a cool character. Seriously,
he just has so much power. Who cares?
But that's his biggest flaw. Like, that humanity is his weakness.
Right. I should get a divorce. You're right.
I'm not saying that. Just take a shot.
Green Lantern was probably the biggest series that Geoff Johns worked on that really put him on the map. And he basically turned the Green Lantern comics from, you know, people the comics that were always just outside of like the top 50 or the top 100 to the top selling comics whenever they came out.
Who was the main Lantern?
That was he brought writing. Hal Jordan back. But then he kind of introduced the Green Lantern core of, like, you know, all the different, and then also the Sinestro core and all the different colors.
The core didn't exist before that.
Like, it definitely did. But
yeah, but they were all dead or something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So he turned into this, like, something big, active, like, crazy space force that was, like,
space cops.
And and it was like, but then he brings in, so you obviously, what's green is hope.
Yeah, is that what, willpower.
Green Lantern power is willpower, and then Sinestro, which yellow, is right? Yellow, is fear. So, you know, the two other, but then he introduced all these other colors. So you had blue, which was
red as blue. Well? I think blue was hope. Red was anger. Indigo was like, I don't even know what indigo black? Was. Was
like yellow thing? Was greed.
Orange was greed.
Orange was greed. Yeah. So you know, yeah.
And
what did that mean?
Pink was love.
Pink was love.
What did that mean? When someone but it was like
lust as well.
Yeah.
They were basically, he introduced all these other different colors and all these different other lanterns and rings, and they kind of came to the head with Sinestro Court War, and then that went into one of the biggest events that Geoff Johns wrote, which was a whole DC wide. Event called Blackest Night, in which every dead DC character comes back to life.
Yeah, that was huge. Pretty silly.
But it was fun.
Yeah.
It's a really big, dumb event, but it's really fun.
I think I read too many of the tie-ins at
the time. I read every single tie-in.
Yeah, so I think I need to go back.
I read them all on a plane, though. So for those people that succumb to the belief that watching a shit movie on a plane can make a movie pretty good, it works for comics, too. I read about 150 issues of this series.
When you're in low air pressure, from China and everything's to Paris. A bit more agreeable. So did you say every dead villain or just every dead character?
Every dead character.
The Teen Titans tie-in was pretty hilarious because they brought back, like, Donna Troy's dead baby and husband.
Oh, that's right.
Heavy.
Yeah,
that was pretty.
You remember? I haven't read that. I just remember the toys that came out at the time. They were kind of like spooky looking back there, like Zombified. Spooky looking. Yeah. I remember that.
Some other big events that Geoff Johns worked on. Obviously, spinning out of Blackest Night was Brightest Day, which is a turd that you should avoid.
Yes.
So that follows immediately afterwards, right?
Yeah. But it does reintroduce Swamp Thing to the DC universe, which is kind of cool.
It had a lot of Martian Manhunter in it, which I always appreciate.
Yeah.
Johns.
His most famous event is Infinite Crisis, which is a big crisis event that follows the 80s DC crisis event that brought all the worlds together. Crisis on Infinite Earths. Infinite Crisis separates them again.
Yeah.
And makes different worlds in the universe. Multiverse. Yeah,
right. Why just more comics?
Because Superboy punches... What does he fucking punch? It's like the most...
Superboy... Was that Superboy Prime or was that Alexander Luthor?
Superboy Prime. Luthor's in it too. It's
I liked how they made...
He basically like punches a crystal, which then like alters space-time
classic
continuum.
Crystal and punch
allows there to be
continuum.
A multiverse again.
I mean, yeah.
And then that allowed them to reboot a lot of different things. It's actually, as far as like big, you know, universe changing.
Good. Like, I think it holds up really well.
Was that the status quo for ages too? Like the stuff that was the fallout of that? Was that until the new 52, like the status quo?
More or less.
Pretty much.
Out of Infinite Crisis came my, I reckon, overall favorite DC event and my favorite Geoff Johns comic, my favorite Mark Waid comic, my favorite Greg Rucka comic, and my favorite Grant Morrison comic, maybe 52, which I think is like just
so
like
good.
If as soon as you've read maybe like 5 to 10 DC comics, go straight to 52.
Yeah. Sell me 52. I haven't read it. Sell it to me.
52 is a year in which Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are not on Earth. And
do you know why from the start, or is that something you find out as you read?
They disappeared in the crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Do you need anything to read before?
Read Infinite Crisis and then read 52.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of like super obscure DC characters in it, which I think like I read 52 when I wasn't really that into comics and really loved it. And going back and rereading it, you pick up all these extra things.
You get like way like, more with a bit of history. Like,
fucking that guy.
All right. Well, you know what? I'm going to do it.
Yeah. So it's like all the characters that it's about, it's all really fun premises. So you have like Booster Gold trying to become the Superman figure of the DC universe now, except he's not doing it to save lives. He's doing it so he can become famous and have and get money. Booster Gold is a superhero from the future who knows everything that's happened. So in theory, he should be able to stop every crime and become a celebrity in the
He's
past.
He's like Biff Buchanan in Back to the Future 2, basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
And then there's another amazing one where all of the evil scientists in the DC universe pull together and like basically like they're like the driving force, like the really bad, you know, kind of the really evil side of that story is all these evil scientists. But it's kind of like it's...
They're all on an island hanging out.
And then again, they're trying to out-evil each other.
It's like a reality show.
It's really, really fun.
Really fun. And then, yeah.
And then you have like, you know, a few... Like, what's the guy that made the Metal Men, whatever that doctor's name is.
Yeah.
Trying to decide if he's evil or just crazy.
Yeah.
So they, what, took it issue by issue? Or how did that work?
It's 52 issues.
And it's just a standalone series called 52, right?
Yeah, and every issue tells maybe four parts of it. Like four different scenes from there's like 20 different plots going on at the same time. Actually Starfire is really well written in that as well.
Starfire is really good.
Starfire is like trapped on an alien planet with Adam Strange and
Animal Man.
Man, fuck, I love this
comic. So good. I'm like the question story.
Oh my God, yeah, of course. And it's also where Renee Montoya from Gotham Central, she becomes the question.
Yeah. And she's question in New 52 as well, isn't she?
No, there's no question in New 52.
Really?
But they're bringing her back on.
I think they're bringing her back.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a new
series. I read a bunch of stuff with the question. She's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's just so much greatness in that. And there's a beautiful elongated man story in there as
beautiful
well.
Beautiful elongated man?
There's a character called Elongated Man.
Oh, I thought it was a character called Beautiful Elongated Man. I was like, whoa, why isn't that a movie yet? I think I know the guy, Channing Tatum.
But yeah, I couldn't recommend that. Probably, if you want, you know, especially if you're quite familiar with DC characters and you haven't read 52 already, you should absolutely read it.
Yeah.
Spinning out of 52, he then wrote a Booster Gold series, which is as fun as 52.
So did he create Booster Gold?
No. he's old. Oh, yeah, and he used to be paired up with the Blue Beetle.
Oh, yeah, right.
They were pals in the Justice League International.
I love Justice League International. Yeah, that's very a really good run. Good,
really
good
fun run. Superhero comics. His Booster Gold run is about, like, because he has access to the time stream, he has to go through these bigger moments in DC history and make sure they happen so that the future doesn't get fucked up. And so, like, he has to go back and make sure that Barbara Gordon gets shot by the Joker.
Yeah, wow.
And, like, stuff like that.
It's such a DC nerd title. I really like it.
Poor Barbara.
Poor Babs. another event that he wrote, which is probably not very good, and definitely, like, if you didn't think Brightest Day was bad enough, this is definitely what seals the deal, is Flashpoint, which is the last event before the New 52, which is when DC... basically wiped the slate clean and started all their comics from one.
Was it because of waning sales, like the classic, like, no sales, let's just...
I think
it was
one of, like, I think some comics were selling really well, but others just needed to kick up the ass.
However, did he write the Batman Flashpoint is what I have to ask.
No, that was Brian Azzarello.
And that's sick.
That's really good. Flashpoint is about an alternate reality where a few big DC events that...
Well, for example,
didn't happen.
Batman, Bruce Wayne gets shot, Thomas Wayne becomes Batman, and Martha Wayne becomes the Joker.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, yeah, and that's awesome. And they're like, I think the Penguin's a big character in it and stuff.
And there's like, there's a casino. It's
yeah,
great.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Really good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pretty much every other Flashpoint tie-in was terrible.
So dumb.
And then in New 52.
Oh, there's an amazing Frankenstein story in that.
Oh, I don't know if I read that.
Yeah, it's fun. And then since the New 52 took over, I haven't read any of these. I've read the first six issues of Justice League, and it was just like,
the
book Justice League.
Yeah. It's kind of weird because it was kind of set ahead of time than the other issue ones, I remember.
I don't know why they overcomplicated that whole thing. There was like a 5-year weird jump between some of the books. And I was like,
and then like Bruce in the comics had him at Superman, and Superman had him at Bruce, but then in Justice League, it was kind of weird. It's like, guys, you just wiped the slate clean. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Hmm. As well as writing Justice League, he wrote Aquaman. He has a small run on Superman, and Forever Evil was the most recent event he did for DC. I didn't read any of those things. Did you?
Nope. I read like one issue of the Superman one, but I really can't deal with John Romita Jr. these days.
I love John Romita Jr.'s art.
He's so slack these days.
Yeah, but I like the slackness.
Classic John Romita Jr. I'm super down with, but these days
He just kind of looks so like a more professional James Kachalka now.
That's true. I guess.
If anyone has really, really enjoyed this, Siobhan and I will be spinning out into our own regular comics book podcast at some point.
You heard it here first.
So it's a Hey Fam exclusive.
Has it got a name yet?
We've no idea what the fuck to call it.
Maybe take a shot.
When you were like, what's something that you could put hey fam in, the only thing I could think of was a death in the fam.
Oh my god.
I was like, I don't know if that's really like
descriptive and weird.
That's so brand awareness. That's so good.
A death in the fam. All right, I love it.
Yeah, I'm signing off on that.
Awesome.
That's great.
Siobhan, you're also, I mean, before we get to this, but Jeff Johns, we know he's capable of writing good comics.
Yeah.
Do you think he's capable of writing a good Batman movie?
I mean, I haven't actually, I haven't read his Batman comics. So
I completely forgot.
Yeah,
Batman really, like, Earth One, which is a more grounded Batman that exists concurrently to the regular DC universe, in which Alfred is like a retired veteran. Like a special.
He's got a goatee.
He's
a badass.
It's just, yeah, it's a bit more grounded and less of the kind of, you know, legacy Batman tropes that are there.
Kind of shows, like, I remember I've read number one, I haven't read volume two yet, but kind of shows like a really, really human Batman, like a lot of fuck ups and a lot of like learning the ropes and not so much this big brutish, like, it was interesting. And I remember, who draws it?
I couldn't tell you.
I just remember them making a point of saying it's the first Batman comic where you see the skin around his eyes and you see his pupils at all times. It's not this cool white thing. It's kind of like really want you like see his worried expressions and stuff. Yeah. And there's a lot of close-ups of that. And I thought that's like a pretty cool, unique thing.
Yeah, but do you think he can write a good Batman movie though?
I don't know. Like, I don't know what he's like with the character. I will totally check out Earth 2 if you guys rate it. But
it's Earth 1.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Earth
1. Has he written movies before?
No.
Get your multiverse facts correct or fuck off.
Has he written any film before?
No, nothing.
He wrote a couple of episodes of Smallville.
Hey. Oh, there you go.
He wrote the Legion of Superheroes episode and the Justice Society episode.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Both of which I watched because I watched all of Smallville.
There you go.
It's not good. I don't know. Like, I mean, I have a lot of faith in Batfleck, so I think that
I believe
he could do a good job, and I think Jeff Johns has enough like affection for the source material that it could be quite fun. I would just be worried if it turns into another like super grimdark.
Who do you want to see as a villain? I mean, the thing is, we're getting kind of like villain fatigue because everyone's going for the easy hits. I mean, this is going to be the same issue with New Spider-Man and stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
Would you like him just to do like something completely left of
center? Like, I'd really like to see like KG Beast or... Not really. But I don't know, like...
Figure out of that, guys.
Jesus.
Yeah, like...
Wait, what's his superpower again? He can...
Isn't he just like a big fucking communist bro? Isn't that his whole thing?
Yeah. No, what's the... I always get it mixed up with KG Beast.
Yeah.
Who's the guy who can like fuse to... Kind of, which is the Batman? He's not necessarily a Batman bad guy. I've read him in Batman Brave and the Bold comics from ages ago. But he can like fuse animals together.
I have no idea who that is.
Are they Russian? That sounds really animals? Good. Is that the KG bit?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was.
I mean, there's some classic Batman villains.
There's some terrible
Batman
villains.
You know, like you could do a Clayface. You could do I don't know why I started with Clayface. Yeah, such a weird one to start with. I don't know. Yeah,
it'd be cool to see like. I don't know, do a good job of Catwoman. Although Michelle Pfeiffer is fucking great.
You didn't like Anne Hathaway's?
No, I didn't.
I thought you were going to do a meow sound just then.
Meow. Yeah, good Catwoman would be great.
But also, like, we've seen her a million times. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know who's left. Like, I mean, I wouldn't
A good
do
Mr.
Penguin
Freeze
again.
Would be sick.
A good Hugo Strange story could be fun.
Hugo Strange would be awesome. Actually, he's cast in Suicide Squad.
Really?
Yeah. What's his name? Ike Benner, you know. DJ Blu-ray from Eastbound and Down. Classic.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, he's Hugo Strange. I don't know if it's on IMDb. I mean, it could be a mad prank. Ashton Kutcher, where are you? But I mean, I think it could be... I think he's playing it, like at least in a background role.
Awesome.
Ooh. So it could be setting it up.
Mr. Freeze would be sick too.
If they did like Freeze. Proper like heartbreaking.
Nora. Yeah.
Definitely. Nora. I mean, that could totally work.
Nora.
It's Levins is Mr. Freeze.
It's on the animated series.
Really good.
We're going to be selling that as a ringtone soon, I guess. It's like $4 a minute to dial up and try to buy it from us.
We'll do a Crazy Nora remix.
Yeah, yeah.
Set to by Axel
Flume.
F.
By your friend Flume.
Yeah, my mate. Old
I think
Flume.
Australia's friend Flume.
I think I'm excited that they've got a comics writer to actually write a comic book movie.
And
hopefully he doesn't fuck it up.
Yeah,
so they
Goya.
Don't do it
that's,
again.
That's pretty good. I mean, take a break, man. Stop writing origin stories.
Yeah.
Any other comics that you want to talk about before we go, Siobhan? Should we talk about Archie? You're a big Archie fan.
I am a big Archie fan.
That got relaunched very successfully. We talked about it last week.
Yeah.
We love the new Mark Waid and Fiona Staples Archie number one.
Yeah, I don't think I could like find any fault with it. Like, I loved it. I thought it was so fun.
Before it was coming out?
I wasn't.
Be like, it's in good hands. Yeah. It'll be fun.
I was like, I love Mark Waid. Love you, Mark. Staples. Like, I don't think they could have come up with like a better team to do that. And I think they did a really great job. Yeah, I'm really psyched by the whole like revamping of the whole universe.
I'm so excited for cool. Chip Zdarsky's Jughead. Chip Zdarsky is the artist on Sex Criminals, currently writing Howard the Duck, a comic that Siobhan and I disagree on called Captara, which is like a space odyssey thing that he's writing at the moment. I think it's really great.
He sold it as Gay Saga.
Not
Gay Saga.
Right.
Really? He actually pitched it as that?
Yeah. In all the interviews, he was like, no, it's just Gay Saga. And I was like, sick, I'm on board.
And it's what?
I don't know. I just find it a little bit too... Maybe I need to like persevere, but the first two issues, it was like super insincere and I didn't like the main character.
Yeah, right.
And it was a little bit too like, gag, 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 gag.
Yeah, I kind of like how gag... I mean, he's a great joke writer.
He's a great
so that's why
joke
I like
writer.
This, yeah. My friend really likes a comic called God Hates Astronauts, which I find insufferable.
Yeah.
But I thought Captara was a much more funny, naturally funny kind of space comic.
When so that, is Jughead that. Out?
Jughead's out, is it this month or next month?
I don't know. I thought they all got weirdly delayed because they tried to
But then
to
this
do
Archie
it.
Number 1 just came out of nowhere. I was like, oh, fuck, there it is. You didn't even know it was out.
Yeah, I know. I missed it totally. But I think the Jughead and the other series that they're doing are going to be quite significantly delayed because they just don't have a lot of money at the moment.
Yeah, right.
Archie.
Poor Archie.
Poor old Archie. But
75
hopefully this
goes really well. Still making...
Still broke.
I loved that they put like the first issue of Archie as well in the back.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that was in the print copy. But
oh,
in
the print copy.
Yeah, like so fun.
It was
like,
cool.
And just so different
he
to what
so
you
weird.
Know.
I know.
Yeah.
It was like Dennis the Menace.
I love the 40s Archie stuff. I have all these like big collections.
So yeah,
in
the 40s when Archie was invented, he looked like this like weird Dennis the Menace.
Yeah.
Like scrappy kind of character.
Yeah.
He was called America's Favorite Boyfriend.
Oh wow.
and they said, don't call him Archie.
Call him Chick.
Call him Chick.
He hates Archie.
He hates being called Archie in those first comics.
Just call him Chick.
Call him Chick.
It's the tale as old as time.
That's what you do. If a guy doesn't like his name, you call
him
Chick.
It's surefire success. Yeah, of course. Every guy secretly wants to be called Chick. They got the psyche of males down pat in that first ish.
But from there, he quickly becomes the Archie that, like, was Dan DiCarlo take over quite soon after the... Was he 60s or 70s?
Yeah, Dan DiCarlo is like 60s.
He defined the Archie that you just... When you think of the character of Archie, he looks like what Dan
DiCarlo...
Close
your eyes, listener. Think of Archie.
Think
that's
of those
the one.
Freckles and red hair.
Dan DiCarlo drew that picture in your head.
Yeah. I just closed my eyes when I was... Yeah.
And this is the Fiona Staples version is the first like genuinely big revamp
right.
since those eras.
I feel like everyone's just been trying to ape Dan DiCarlo since he did it. Like, there have been great variations, and like Harry Lucy, I think, was a really great Archie artist. But in sort of the past 20 years, everyone's just been like, so can we just reprint Dan DiCarlo and then also draw like Dan DiCarlo, and that's all we do?
Innovate, baby. I mean, the good thing about this character, and I don't know, it's like you can tell they're them still without having to go, is that like it's the giveaway things are there, the freckles, the hat for Jughead, like, yeah.
He just looks like he has like Justin Bieberish good looks. It's pretty awesome.
It's great.
Still loves being called Chick.
Can you read old Archie comics and they still hold up? I know Dan DiCarlo stuff, if they're like very gaggy, but they're fun.
I mean,
they're strips.
I hate 11s.
I love to gag.
I think they
hold up. I'm going to eat this microphone right now.
And then fart it out like Ant-Man in the Wasp. It's going to fart out Ant-Man in number 2.
You heard, that's another one of Angus's perfect predictions.
Yeah, you got to hear it here first, folks. Opening scene.
But yeah, like, I mean, I still think Archie holds up, but it is definitely like jokes from the 40s until, you know.
Hey, sometimes a good joke's
like,
a joke forever.
Every joke is like, hey, women are actually smart.
Exactly. And it's very like, everything's very like family friendly and it's all pretty dated, but there's still like, there's some really great classic cartooning in a lot of the old stuff, and there's some genuinely really funny jokes. Like, there's this whole thing that the current Archie comics don't do, which is where, like, Jughead was Betty's sassy best friend as well as Archie's best friend.
Yeah, right.
And so every time Archie would blow her off to go for a date with Veronica, Jughead would be like, you don't let him treat you like that. Like, what are you going to go do? And be like her sassy offsider. And it was so great. And, like, yeah, there's a lot of, there's
maybe
a lot of really
come back.
Classic
maybe
Archie
maybe
stuff.
Some cool classic tropes will find their way into the pages, like a little
I'd
nod
sick, I'd be
to
into
the
it.
Old time
I've
readers.
been trying to reread old, no, just read for the first time, Chris Claremont's classic X-Men run from the... early 80s? Is that what it is?
It was like 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
He wrote for a long ass time. Yes, I just finished Phoenix Saga and I'm now reading Days of Future Past. And the story's great, the characters are great, but the exposition in every single frame is just makes it the most unenjoyable read.
Like this is happening for this reason and this reason.
Well, no, yeah, that, but also like, you know, the old way of writing comics is that you had to treat every issue like it was somebody's first comic.
Mm.
So like, not only do you have to explain to them how a fucking comic works, you also have to explain to them who every character is, what superpowers they are, what everyone's motivation is. And they don't just do it in like, you know, this optional,
page.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. This optional panel that you can just read. This is, but it's like, you know, my name is Nightcrawler and I'm flying over here and I have my teleport powers or else I would have been in a real pickle like I was last issue when this happened. Oh, and I hope they don't come back. Oh my God, they came back. Uh-oh, I hope they don't find out that I can't do this at the moment because, oh, they found out. Now like I'm going to go back to my planet, which is really content, yeah.
And you're like, but oh, that's it. Like, yeah. I've just got backstory and then, yeah, repeat.
And then, so there's like in the 24 pages of each issue, there's maybe like I'm not like 10 pages of actual plot progression.
And that's,
it's so frustrating.
Hard to read if you're reading it in one hit for sure. Like, and
like, I love,
I'm an adult.
I love reading comics on my iPad. I love just buying a huge run and then just plowing through it.
Mm.
Like, I know that's probably not the way they were intended to be read, but there is something so, especially, I mean, it's close to being on a plane again, like just being able to burn through it took someone 7 years to put this together and I read it
in an hour and a half.
Yeah, I read it between here and Singapore. Yeah. Like, it's just like, it's such a kind of,
it's cool.
It's such a fun way to pass the time. And when you were like, oh my God, I need to take a break from sitting down looking at a page because I'm like exhausted from reading all this exposition.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of superhero comics from around that time are really similar. Like the classic George Perez, Marv Wolfman, Teen Titans run is like, I loved it when I first read it. And I'm having so much trouble trying to go back and reread it because it's so dense.
It's just the way
and I bought
were.
It in stupid flippin' omnibus edition. And so they're also like weigh 10 kilos and I have to like lie down just to read them.
I reckon omnibus are the dumbest way to read comics.
I'm so annoyed that I bought so much stuff in omnibus. Do you think
we're going to see now, because I guess, you know, comic sales are super, like not super high, but higher than they've been in a long time. Many of those are digital sales. Do you think we're going to kind of see a reverse of that now where there's no continuity? Sorry, there's continuity, but there's no exposition. It's kind of like people are just going to be reading these and maybe the style, style of writing is going to change.
No, definitely. And that's not a recent thing. That's been since more people started reading comics bought as trades.
Yeah.
Like a graphic novel or a trade.
So you don't so it's like, you know, to have all that exposition halfway through the book interrupts the story flow. So you don't have that anymore. I mean, it's a different kind of problem where you have writers writing comics that don't make sense until the fifth issue, which I like kind of, but you know, they definitely write it for a trade. Like, you know, you know
that's going to be,
you have to be in there for the long haul. Exactly. And yeah,
month by month, I've had some problems sometimes reading comics that are like that. Cause I'm like, what the fuck happened in the last one again? Then I end up reading the first issue 6 times, the second issue 5 times. Like, I have to read them before I read the whole lot. And I'm like, I should just wait for the trade sometimes. Like, being early isn't always like, you know, the best.
We've been talking for an hour and a half now.
And also, like, you are Geoff Johns expert now, dear listener. Like, I knew barely nothing and I've walked away thinking I could win a Geoff Johns trivia, at least come fourth.
He's literally talking as he walks out of the room.
Yeah, no, that's it. There's one down the road. I just started it then. But yeah, and you guys sold me on reading a couple of like big ass multiverse stories, which I've always been kind of scared of. So
I feel like, I don't know. I read so many Marvel comics and it's a rarity for me to buy a new DC one, but I definitely, I don't know. I love what just before New 52 and for the decade and a half before that, like those are some of my favorite runs and favorite like
solid gold
for
hits.
Sure. I really like, I get, like, I never wanted to be that kind of nerd who's like, oh, I really miss the way it used to be. But anytime I pick up like an old DC comic, I'm like, fuck, I miss the pre-52 universe. Like, I really do.
But it's gotten to the point where they are now, you know, writing. It seems to be like they're writing like with the way Batgirl's written now, and they've launched a few new series that seem to be totally in the right tone that I want from DC Comics. But the damage has been done. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, for sure.
I've read a couple of the Batgirl. It's super fun.
Yeah, Batgirl is good.
Yeah, okay. Batgirl's super good.
There are some good DC comics at the moment. Like, I'm enjoying a couple of different.
Oh yeah,
series.
Move Out of Gotham is super fun. It's just like starter up from the ground up again. Mm. Yeah, it's like, it's classic. Yeah, it's classic, like that era of Babs Batgirl that you dig. It's sick.
All right. Well, you can hear more from Siobhan and I talking comics when we decide on what we're calling our podcast.
I think that was decided.
Death of the Fam is pretty great.
Death of the Fam is awesome. It's just you might find some like murderers might start downloading your show by accident. And they're like, what are these comic book dudes?
If you can think of a better name that that we can incorporate the word fam into that has to do with comics.
Reverse engineer shows for us by coming up with great titles and be like, now make a show out of that.
That
asshole.
Is a really good idea.
Yeah.
Please post it on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/heyfampodcast.
Same as our email.
Yeah, you can email us, which is heyfampodcast@gmail.com. Please, with any ideas or suggestions or say hi, whatever.
Also,
you like.
Leave a review on iTunes. We're loving your Entourage episodes.
The thing
amazing.
Is, don't review our show. Review your dream episode of Entourage.
And they've been amazing. My favorite was Johnny Drama Down Under.
This is the first reference to Entourage this episode.
This is like...
I had someone saying they came close to like throwing their phone out the window because we were talking about Entourage so much.
Can you name
last
and
week.
Shame? No, tell me off mic because I've.
No, yeah, but we're going to get her in as a guest at some point soon. So I'll name and shame her while she's here
and present it to them on the show.
Siobhan, have you got a social media platform that you'd like to be contacted on?
Absolutely not. Definitely not. No one come near me, please. Thank you.
Classic. What have you got? Are you going to plug anything, Levins?
Twitter.com/levdawg, LEVDAWG. Instagram.
Come for the lols, stay for the holes.
Facebook,
I guess.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah.
How about you, Chimichangas?
Just like if you see me in the street, just give me a just give come me a up dollar. And rub my hand and keep walking, and then I'll know you're a listener. also, I'll see the mic, the Magic Con, which is a Magic Mic convention I'm starting next week.
Okay.
And I haven't got any guests or big names yet, but. It's going to be real grassroots, his first one, and it's going to be one of the ones that...
Because you're rooting him on the grass.
Well, no, they're going to be asking us to come. They're going to be like, by
best
the end of
best joke
it,
of the episode.
Well, yeah, no, I thought the eating microphone one had legs. Yeah, follow me on the internet. But yeah, leave your ridiculous dream pictures of Entourage. Like, I secretly check that every day, and when I see new ones, it's awesome. And competition's getting pretty good. There was talk of Vince coming down under to shoot a Kangaroo Jack reboot, which I was like... That sounds like the dream season I want to watch.
That is the biggest lie you've ever told, right? That sounds like a Greenlight Boy pitch.
Oh, wow. That's something else I want to plug. Yeah, my other podcast called The Greenlight Boys, where me and my friend Scott pitch shitty straight to... Used to be straight to DVD, straight to Blu-ray, now it's straight to streaming. Like the lowest of the low.
Real
movies
audio.
For the lowest common denominators. And they're usually starring either Rob Schneider, Kevin James, or Kangaroo Jack himself. This week, we kind of broke the mold and we did... our first documentary, which is a kind of hard thing to pitch, but it was the true story behind Air Bud's death. And it got pretty heavy in parts, guys. So yeah.
Sounds like I'm crying already.
That's just the wasp inside you.
Thanks so much to Siobhan, Angus, and the wasp for joining us this week.
she's in us all.
Unfortunately, Jane's Addiction couldn't come in, but luckily I'm just calling Perry Farrell on Skype right now. And
you're on speakerphones, Perry. Do your thing.
They're set up. They've got some beautiful, shiny instruments. They're going to play us out. Thank you so much. Until next week, we've been Hey Fam.
See you next week.